Praise the Lord. All right, wonderful. We're just gonna keep pick up and just keep on going. Is that okay? Hey, I wanna. Let's see. We're gonna turn to Psalm 89 in this session. One day I was. I walked up to the face of a mountain. And I stood as close as I could, and I looked up the face of the mountain. And I asked the mountain, I said, what does it feel like to know that nothing stands between you and heaven? And the mountain said, it makes me feel like you. And I was reminded that how we try to sometimes turn beauty into to such strangeness because it does not always agree with what culture says is acceptable. But once you get out beyond what has been created to be or has become what is known as modern culture, once you get out into creation rather than culture, you start thinking very differently in the presence of the Lord. And the beauty of His presence will bring your art and creativity alive in your own heart. And I want to remind all of us that we will never change culture by becoming like culture any more than we will ever change church by becoming like the church. And one of the things that I believe God's calling us to and challenging us to at this time is to be who He created us to be, find our song, find our sound, live it fully. I think it's also time that we kind of give ourselves permission to go ahead and demystify the prophetic and go ahead and become the prophetic people that we're created to be in our generation. Those who impacted their generation were the ones that stepped outside of the ranks of normalcy and quit trying to line up with everybody's definition of what they were supposed to be about. And go ahead and rather than enduring Christianity, they found a place to enjoy Jesus. And we start enjoying Jesus and enjoying life, the endurance of religious things always were paled by that. And I want to, in introducing Psalm 89, I want to say to you that sometimes worship songs, now hear this real good, sometimes worship songs create atmospheres that constrain the imagination and protects the politeness of church services and prevents worship. Sometimes worship songs carry a liberating language that causes people to catch the glimpses of God's glory, which increases their yearning to know Him in a deeper way. And with that then comes a heightened awareness of His presence as He reveals His nature. And we start seeing heaven. And when we start seeing heaven, then we get to start being an instrument that resonates the sound of heaven. And that's why, like last night, I said, you know, worship songwriters, when you write a worship song, you're not writing next year's most popular chorus. You're writing next generation's language for accessing God. So I just want to sort of just declare some of this as a prayer or a proclamation over this land, that the poets come alive again, that the singers come alive again, that those that carry the sound of heaven would come alive in this day, because there's, I don't know if you realize this or not, but lawgivers never shape culture. Lawmakers never shape culture. Songwriters do. Do you ever notice that? Lawgivers don't shape culture. They react to something that's going on in culture that's a negative thing, and they react, and they'll create rules and regulations and somewhat tracks or boundaries, hopefully, that their culture will run on. But they don't really shape culture. They react to negative things in culture. But the ones who tell us who God are those who find fullness of their creative expression, like the poets and architects. They tell us who God is. Poets tell us, songwriters. Artists are really a force that's been over the generations have told us who God was. For example, an artist. Well, if I were at my mother's house having Sunday dinner, and I went to sit down in my mother's house, and she'd made Sunday dinner, and I'd get ready to eat, and then all of a sudden, my mother, I've heard it before, my mother would say, all right, hey, get your elbows off the table. Do your Irish mothers do that? You know, get your elbows off the table. And you know what I do? I get my elbows off the table because I know my mother. She's 81 years old, but she'll hurt you. So you get your elbows off the table. And no matter when or what, if you ever forget, she'll, hey, I don't care if you are, she'll say this, hey, I don't care if you are 41 years old. You're in my house and you get your elbows off the table. Because I know that my, 42. You got some rude people here. But I immediately know that her theology is going to dictate the atmosphere if I'm sitting at my mother's table, right? So I pull my elbows off the table. But now somebody needs to ask the question, what's wrong with having your elbows on the table? What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is when Da Vinci painted The Last Supper, the only person in the picture with elbows on the table is Judas Iscariot. Judas was the one with the elbows on the table. So now, from that day forward, we have a belief system. It's wrong to put your elbows on the table. And so this tradition becomes etiquette, and pretty soon it's just a known. It's a known. You just don't put your elbows on the table. But in fact, the picture couldn't be any more wrong. It's his interpretation of 1,000 years from when he was even alive, or more, 2,000 years, almost 2,000 years. The period in the picture is not even right. It's not historically correct. It's not biblically valid. Nothing about it is right. But we know that it's sin because Judas put his elbow on the table. I don't even know. There wasn't a table. Who knows? But nonetheless, a belief system. And that's how we see it. Because an artist told us how to see it. Now you think of 1829. There was a poet put a poem in a newspaper in upstate New York. Remember the poem? 'Twas the night before Christmas and all through the house. Not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. Now before this poem is over, we have a whole new understanding of what Christmas season is about. Now it's not about a baby in a manger anymore or a king coming to earth. Now it's about a fat guy flying through the air with a sleigh and reindeer and a bunch of... And he knows everything. He knows if you've been good. He knows if you've been bad. And he's going to gift you according to his judgment of how you have performed. And he's going to come flying down the chimney, with all these gifts. And one of the reindeer's got a big red nose. And so all of this just told us a completely another story that we base economy structures on. We base, and I'm not an anti-Santa Claus guy, you guys. I like. He gave me a guitar one time. So I like him. He's a friend. But the fact of the matter is there's where a lot of our belief systems are established. And if we're going to shape culture, why don't we be the ones that shape culture from heaven's perspective? Why don't the prophetic... Well, it's time for us to demystify the prophetic and rather throw it off into some kind of weird world. Why don't we be willing to embrace this choreographed collision that we call life? that many times is collision after collision and clumsy. Why don't we, even if it's clumsy, let's start to dance a dance with the Holy Spirit and realize that the Holy Spirit wants to do some wild, crazy, wonderful and wondrous things in our generation. And when we begin to access heaven on that kind of a level, we're going to see that there's a grace upon the land of Ireland that there's not on any other land in the world. And I want to talk about that some in this session, because so much that I want to talk about, we're just not going to get to it in one day. That's all there is to it. But when you think of the seer anointings and the giftings that are in the people that are in their DNA, in their knowings, I believe it's a time for a release of holy knowings in Ireland, and I believe that there's a grace for this place, And the grace on the place is when, and it will start to be realized when the people of the place know the grace that's on them. And the enemy does not want us to know that. He wants to know our history as conflict and loss and potato famines and death and debt and that's what, you know, that's just the way it is. Well, that's not the way it is. We need to have a heavenly perspective that can help break through this thing. I'm not talking from some American know-it-all kind of thing. I'm not some arrogant American coming over here trying to tell y'all to act like American church. I want to tell you that there's something that is a whole lot older than America that is lying in the land of Ireland waiting for a generation to be quickened and come alive to those amazing prophetic graces and anointings that are on them as a people. And there's the graces for places. I believe that all those years ago, and I can walk you through so much of the crazy journey, but years and years ago, when my sweetie and I began to feel the call to Ireland, it was supernatural all the way. But it was those just some of those holy knowings that started to come to our life. For example, we were sitting in our living room praying. We'd been praying about coming to Ireland. We were sitting in our living room one night talking with our kids and was telling the kids, I said, you know, we've never been to Ireland or anything, but I just can't get away from it. I know that we're called to go to Ireland for it, to see it and be there on the land. This is years ago. We're sitting in our farmhouse there outside of Nashville, Tennessee, and all the family sitting around on the couches, you know, and we're talking. And while we're talking, it's one of those old houses with a big window on each side of the old Victorian farmhouse. We're sitting there, and while I'm saying kids, my kids are small teenagers, about 15, our youngest one's about 15 at that time. And I said, I think we're going to Ireland. What do y'all think? And when I said we're going to Ireland, there was a green light shot through the house. And it came through the window and all the way through. And like we're sitting here like this, we're talking. And all of a sudden a green light goes shooting all the way through the house and out the other end of the house. And I'm thinking, I'm the only one that saw this. So I'm not going to say anything. But when that green light shot through, the only thing I said was, as kids, I think we have a green light to go to Ireland. And then one of the kids said, did you see that too, Daddy? And then Denise said, I saw it. Did you see? So now we're all, now that's a crazy little story right there. But the entire family experienced something that was not normal. It was not natural. There was a seeing. There was a knowing. There was a quickening. Now, based upon that bizarre thing right there, we all came alive. We're not going on a trip. We're not just going on something. We're going to Ireland. See, it puts that knowing in you. And we could call it a confirmation or whatever. But see, the thing is it gave us a place to, gave us a time and a space, and in that moment, we knew that we could celebrate something God had just done. And now, here's what I want to say. Never live where you're not celebrated. Never live where you're only tolerated. Never go where you're not celebrated. And never go where you're only tolerated. And never live in a place that you tolerate. If you tolerate where you live, you'll never know the full favor of God in the place that you live. If you're only tolerating the place and never live in a place that you tolerate and never be just tolerated. God created you to know the favor of God. And if you live your life being tolerated and tolerating, you'll never know it. You'll never experience it. There's got to be something come alive in you that says, you know what? Wait a minute. I come from an incredibly powerful purpose. God put me in the earth just like he did all that other stuff that's functioning in this realm. I'm one of those. I'm the favor of God. I'm the fire of God. I'm the wonder of God. This is hard for some of us to say, but I'm the beauty of God. Now, Steve got to looking at turtle bellies up in the... And you start looking at turtle bellies. You think of a turtle belly as something, but you start, oh my God. Look at the wonder and the beauty of God that just crawls around somewhere. It's because don't look at the world's standards of what beauty is about. Don't let the world define your music. Don't let the world define your expression of your love unto God. Don't let your education hold you back. We always find things. See, I was raised in a holler in Kentucky in a two-room house with 13 of us living in a two-room house. I know what poverty is. I know what hurt is. I know what drunkenness. We lived in an atmosphere of abuse and drunkenness and violation of every unimaginable kind, all kinds of incest, all kinds of suicide. A good time at our house growing up was everybody get drunk and have a fight in the front yard. Just ruthless, brutal sadness, grief, hurt, pain. That was our life. And I walked into a National Guard armory at a rock and roll dance in 1971, and somebody started telling me about Jesus. And his friend told me about Jesus, and before the night was over, I wound up in a puddle of beer that somebody had spilled on the floor. I prayed my very first prayer, became a brand new creation. Did you hear the word? A brand new creation. A brand new creation. Old things had just passed away. All things had become new. And I rose up out of there, a brand new creation with wet knees, and been stepping toward the favor of God ever since, because not long after that I found out about that there are generations and generations, fourth and fifth generation iniquities and loss and disasters can be upon a life. But you know, when I rose up from there, a brand new fellow with wet knees, I started realizing now that my children and my children's 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 children will not know the darkness. They'll know the covenant promises of God from this day forth. So that means the first known Christian in seven generations just got saved in the middle of a song called Enagada de Via. I got saved. And I rose up from there, and within the first week, I didn't know you were supposed to do this or not supposed to do this. I just started telling everybody what Jesus done in my life at the armory. And there was over 200 kids got saved in my school that week. And the following Friday night, I led 80 people to Jesus in a church where the first time I ever went to church, I was the speaker, and I've been in ministry ever since. For 43 years, I've been carrying the message of change. See? So don't tell me God is not creative. He can take a mess and turn it into a message. He can create light out of darkness, life out of death. Well, now, what we've got to be is a people who access God's options. I've been in everything from car wrecks to plane crashes and all kinds of things. I've been in 43 years of ministry. And all the disasters, they still come. But I have a God who's more than able to deliver. And 43 years, I've also been a pastor three times. And I'm not a good pastor, and I have references. But the journey, nonetheless, is a journey of finding what's God's next, what's God's opportunities to shift and change and break the darkness off. And so you find out, let me pull this to this now. You find out that there are certain places that have certain graces on them. And I believe that there is a grace upon Ireland, unlike, and if you look at the whole globe, you look at all the earth and all of creation, there's a sound in this land that you'll never find anywhere else. And there's also a grace on this place. Do you know that there are sometimes that there are certain things about God you will never experience until you go to the place where that's the expression of who He is? Well, you know, if you're going to say something like that, I need some Bible for that. Don't you need a little Bible for that? Think about God when He says, Abraham, come out here on the porch. I need to talk to you. Abraham goes out on the porch, and God says, count the stars. This is going to be a job. Well, what He was doing is He took out of one place to the next so that He could speak to him through creation. And so when He looks into the heavens, we know that He couldn't count the stars, because we know some mathematician scientist did the math on it, and you actually find out if He stood there and counted one star every second, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. It would take him 2,500 years to count the stars that were in the heavens and in that system. But problem is, 2,500 years later, when he gets to the last one, he's got a problem because the universe is so expanded that it's expanding by light years every time he counts one. So what he was doing is he was causing him to come to a place to hear, because he had a sensitivity to hear, because he had stepped into the right place to hear. Another example, grace is for places. Remember when God said, Samuel, go down to Gilgal, I need to speak to you. Samuel could have said, well, God, you're speaking and I'm listening already. Why are we going to go all the way down? Why wear out a good mule riding all the way to Gilgal when you're already talking and I'm already listening? But no, he had to go to Gilgal. And when he got to Gilgal, days and days on a mule riding through the desert and the donkey or whatever, all of this to get there, because it required sacrifice and obedience. And once he got there, God spoke one sentence, and it was over. Don't you know Samuel wants to say, are you kidding me? I've come all the way here, one sentence. But he walked out of there with the release of the favor of God, and he was able to walk into the fullness of his destiny because sacrifice and obedience is a part of the process. Now, in the land of Ireland, there are holy knowings waiting for a generation to get it. See, those old Celtic knowings that have been so poisoned that are actually still in our blood. I want to talk about some of those for just a second. But I want to do it from Psalm 89. Psalm 89 says, remembering the covenant with David in sorrow for lost blessing. So we know that this is a song. This is one of, if for lack of a better word, if you want to say, one of the top 150 hit parade of David's time. This is one of the 150 psalms. It's not all of them, of course, because they're still being written today, and weren't all of them in those days. As a matter of fact, the most prolific songwriter of the bunch was David's son, Solomon, wrote 1,015 psalms that didn't make the book. A prolific poet and songwriter had access to the knowings of God through creation. Now, here you have a guy named Ethan. Now, if you think of remembering the covenant of David, if you boil down covenant, you can teach on covenant every Sunday, every 5 days a week if you want to here, for 10 hours a day for the next 5 years, and you'll never exhaust the subject of covenant, would you? And some of you theologian Bible teachers in here, you know that's a multi-layered thing. But if you really boil it down to one couple things, covenant simply means God says, I will be your God, you'll be my people, and I'll be in your midst. That's covenant. And so from that covenant knowing, here, this songwriter, who was one of the ones that was trained in poetry and trained in the tabernacle of David, they all get you, when you get up in the morning, what's the first thing you do? You begin to interacting with God. Because David taught everybody that seven times a day I praise the Lord. And three times a day I pray. And so every day, though David were the king, and instead of committee meetings and board meetings and press conferences, seven times a day he would just grab a guitar and just break into song. And when he'd break into the song, he'd just start singing the spontaneity of his heart. And he had someone in 1 Chronicles 16:4 assigned and appointed just to follow him around everywhere he goes. He says they were appointed to thank. We talked about it last night. Praise. And what was the third one? To record, King James says. So he had full-time staff-paid recorders, the word zakar. So the way that works is I'm King David, and I'll break into singing. And singing back then is not like singing today. Singing back then was the word shira. And shira means to walk about as a strolling minstrel, or a bard, or a mind singer, or just walking around singing. And when I bring no PA systems, so when I come by you singing, what I do is I get in your space. And you got 38,000 Levites, and here comes these singers walking by playing instruments. So when I come into your space, like with Claire, her heart rate will go up, her pulse will change, everything about her will change because I'm invading Stephen. I'm invading his space. And he has to respond to what I'm carrying and the sound I'm bringing. So when he says, sing unto the Lord a new song, that's what you're doing. And so David would do this seven times a day. The other word for sing would be that of a poet, bard, minstrel. We call them all kinds of things. Minstrels, mind singers, galliards. In the ancient Celtic culture, they called them skalds, for example. And they carried a connection with creation and a connection with the land, and that's where they got their songs from and their creativity, interacting with creation. Now, in the days of David, this guy would have gotten up that morning. There's another word for sing, by the way, rina, to screech or to shout. If you can imagine 38,000 people all of a sudden screaming like eagles at the gate of Zion, putting a sound into the heaven that puts all of their enemies on notice that God is in our midst. And remember, there are 7,000 living languages today, but all written and living, all languages converge in Zion. That's why if you're east of Zion, you write from right to left. If you're west, you write from left to right. All written languages converge in the presence of the Lord for the language of song. Now, if you were in the Tabernacle of David days, you would rise in the morning and begin to sing the lyric that flows out of you as a poet. And this guy says his name is a contemplation or a masculine of Ethan. The song, the word Ethan means one who endures. Ethan an Ezrahite. Watch this. That means one who rises up out of the soil. You know, God in his wisdom that can paint a turtle belly can also chooses, according to the book of Acts, to know where you're going to be born, where you're going to be live, what boundaries, what nation, what the cells of your being, everything about you. And he puts you where he has designed you to resonate fully your song, to be the instrument of worship in that place that carries his presence. When you just diminish it down. On this day, Ethan wakes up, he looks up, and he begins to sing. And he sings, I will sing the mercies of the Lord forever. With my mouth I'll make known your faithfulness to all generations. Why did God put these people around, why did David put these people around him that will follow him so when he breaks into spontaneous song, they write every word down. And then David would say, hey, get this over to the chief musician from Nahaloth. This is a flute song. A flute is the only sound that will interpret what I'm sensing in the spirit. Or get this over to the chief musician from Neganoth, which is a harp or stringed instrument. Or get this over to the chief musician from Shushani Duth. Anybody know what a Shushani Duth is? It's an instrument. It's a trumpet. Trumpet of assemblage. Get this to Shushani Duth. Anybody named Susan here? Susan means, is there a Susan? Susan, if you ask a Susan what your name means, it means lily. Because trumpet of assemblage, lily. So if you look at a lily, you see a trumpet. And David, being a prophetic musician, he would know into the future, there will be one day when the last trump shall sound will be sounded by the lily of the valley, which would be Jesus. So he had this eternal sense of knowing in his creativity and his poetry. But he might say to the chief musician, Shigionoth, we'll get that song over there, and they'd write an arrangement according to Shigionoth, which is wild, sporadic, erratic, frenzied rhythms set to prayer. Which means when you pray, you get shiggy with it. You're going to shiggy down when you pray. It was a full engagement, and Shigionoth, you know, it's funny and it's kind of a joke, but it's wild, erratic, frenzied praying, bringing the flesh under submission to the desire of God, and the spirit responses to God. We're instruments, and if you look at all the things that happen on a physiological level when you sing and when you pray or when you dance. See, David said, oh, you know what dancers are? Dancers are nothing but those who sculpt the air. They cause their bodies to become instruments of expressed worship, and when they dance, they're actually displacing the air that was there with expression of praise. Every nation has a national dance, a national anthem, a national bird, a national flower, a national tree. All of these emblems that represent the land. And then down through the ages, you start seeing some that rise up with musical instruments that become the signature sounds of the land, like a harp in this situation. It's on your Guinness. It's on your official documents. It's on your electric bill. You know, when it's civil, the harp is facing one way. Is that not true that turn the harp the other way? But it's the sound that is identified with this land. It's also the sound that David, seven times a day, would grab a hold of and begin to release, and here would come that prophetic release through David. Now, the Celtic lands, you find in your past, you find Celtic religion, you find pagan, a lot of paganism that wrote out of the Celts because that was counterfeit. But there are still those knowings and those spiritual sensitivities and sensibilities. Pagan is just the word that comes from the word paganos, which means those who land dwellers, lived off the land. See, there was a knowing of the land in those days. And then you find later Celtic spirituality. And there's where you find a lot of the shamans and the shanakis and the superstitions and the idolatry and all that was wrapped around religious things in Ireland. And then there was a time that there, and also that would have been around the days of Celtic mysticism burrowing into the ground as well. And then you find a season of Celtic Christianity. And that's where all the prophets and the saints and people started actually engaging with God through the creation. And in those days, they understood that, first of all, there most of them read Bibles and stuff and didn't have written languages. This back in the days of like old script and stuff. And so their language and their knowings of God was what was called natural revelation. The natural revelation means that they would hear what God was saying in the trees, hear what God was saying in the water, hear what God was saying in the wind. Everything about their life was engaging with God. And that's where you find those Celtic monastic communities being born out of those kind of ideas. Not out of the Roman ideas. You know, Patrick was not a Catholic until he was dead for a long time. You know, because his knowings were based on signs and wonders and miracles and interaction with God and walking the wonder of God. And then religious ideologies would come later, always. They always do that, no matter what land you're in. But now, today, we have things like portals and vortexes and this kind of stuff that the old folks used to call thin places. And the thing is we don't need to be afraid of some of this terminology. We all know that New Age is the present thing that's born out of that stuff. And all New Age is recycled paganism and one more distraction from knowing the wonder and the goodness of God and seeing the giftings of God and the creativity of God and God's nature demonstrated in His people. And so, with those very same kind of ideas, you see here that Ethan rises up one morning and he says, "I will sing of the mercies of the Lord forever. With my mouth I'll make known faithfulness." How in the world is this guy going to sing of the mercies of the Lord forever? He's going to live to about 70 and he's going to die. He's not going to sing forever. The song that you leave for the next generation is what enables you to sing of the mercies of the Lord forever. What happens is religion and culture will come in and try to take the song away from God's people so that the forever covenantal promises and sound of God will not be known in the people. And I just want to declare right now that this is awakening day. This is new day where we reach back and find those covenantal purposes that God intended for us to walk in, the signs and wonders and interacting with God and the knowings of God to be real in this land again, without all the poisons of Protestantism and the idolatry and the poisons of Catholicism, and without, you go jump on back past all of those, and let's get back to the heart of who God really is and a people whose blood is carrying the sound of song, because they're the ones that are carrying the sound of the song to shift nations. And another thing, what watch how the enemy does this. You know, if I don't know how many of you are accustomed to going into the woods, but if you go walking into the woods, and there where the birds are singing, and the leaves are leaving, and the worms are worming, and the place is just all full of life. But while you walk into the forest, all of a sudden the birds will stop singing. And the reason they stop singing is because of fear of man. And God's given us all a song, and we're supposed to be a part of that symphony of worship. But the fear of man has taken the song away. And nothing will hush your song any quicker than the fear of man. It's a powerful force that takes people's nature and song away. And this is also one of the reasons you're living in a day where there's empty churches and full theaters. Is because we've lost our song and our sound and our creativity, and we're caught in these religious restrictions. But that darkness is about to have to yield to those that are coming alive to the sound of who they are. And it is Ireland's time. Now is Ireland's time. I was born in Kentucky. I came from deep roots and tangled limbs. And there's a lot of deep roots and tangled limbs now in Ireland. And it's tangled up around all kinds of old stuff. And a lot of it's old darkness stuff. I was a victim of a lot of all the superstition that comes out of this land, and the darkness that comes out of this land, and all the hurts that comes out of this land. But I also know that there's a redeeming, restoring, renewing, refreshing, redemptive God is going to raise those true anointings up out of this land. Now, but I'll tell you one thing: when it gets hot over here, it is hot, isn't it? But I brought y'all some pretty weather, and now I'm repenting for that now. But let me share this with you. Ooh, Lordy. Well, I'm stuck. I want to read you something here. There is a tribe in Africa. Where the birth date of the child is counted not from when they were born. Now listen to this. There's a tribe in Africa, the birth date of a child is counted not from when they were born, nor from when they are conceived, but from the day that that child was a thought in its mother's mind. And when a woman decides that she will have a child, she goes off and sits under a tree by herself. She listens until she can hear the song of the child that wants to come. And after she's heard the song of this child, she comes back to the man who will be the child's father. And she teaches the song to him. And then, when they make love to physically conceive the child, some of that time they sing the song of the child as a way to invite the child into the world. When the mother is pregnant, the mother teaches that child's song to the midwives and to the old women of the village. So that when the child is born, the old woman and the people around her sing the child's song to welcome him. And then as the child grows up, the other villagers are taught the child's song. And if the child falls or hurts his knee or whatever, somebody will pick the child up and sing its song to him. Or perhaps the child does something wonderful or goes through the rites of puberty. Then, as a way of honoring this person, the people of the village sing his or her song. In this African tribe, there's one other occasion when the villagers sing to the child. If at any time in his or her life the person commits a crime or some horrible social act, the individual is called to the center of the village, and the people in the community form a circle around them and they sing their song to them. Because this tribe recognizes that the correction for antisocial behavior or violence is not punishment. The correction is love and a remembrance of identity. When you recognize your own song, you have no desire or need to do anything to hurt anybody else. And it goes that way through their life. In marriage, the songs are sung together. And finally, when the child is lying in bed, ready to die, all of the villagers know his or her song. And they sing for the last time the song to that person. Now, you may not have grown up in an African tribe that sings your song to you at all the crucial life transition places, but life is always reminding you when you are in tune with yourself and who you were created to be. And when you feel good and right, when you're doing what you are doing will be matching your song. And when you feel horrible, it doesn't. In the end, we shall all recognize our song, and we're going to sing it well. And you may feel a little warbly right now at this moment in your life, but so have all the great singers. Just keep singing and you will find your way home. What a powerful thing when you think about it. Now let me tell you something about creativity and song and singing and all this. Now this is somebody's bottle I'm going to use as an example here. I think it belongs to Romy. he put his name on it. But if you, as a worshiper, the way you move in the full creativity that you're created for is for allow this to be full of the life of God to the point that the overflow of your worship is what serves the world with your gifting and your anointing. Now, at any point, religious or depression, drugs, hurt, woundedness, whatever it is that robs you of your song. When you begin to lose your song, what happens is there's no overflow of your worship. Fear of man takes your song away. It quietens down who you are. Now you live with thinking survival. And you start living surviving financially, surviving physically, surviving. I know a bit about trying to survive in harsh times. Even as late as about 9 months ago, my wife and I were in a head-on collision, head-on car wreck. I'm not even supposed to be out now. And I suffered brain damage and nerve damage and all kinds of things. And I've had to go brain training and speech therapy. And there's all kinds of things that I never thought I'd ever have to experience. That because the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And so, but if we start living our lives of surviving and our worship goes away, our song changes. It becomes muddy by the thing. Okay, even worse. What happens is if you are not experiencing the overflow of your creativity and worship, what happens is it starts evaporating and evaporating and evaporating. And what happens is all of this is supposed to be full of the Spirit of God in here, makes room for the enemy to move into your life and bring depression. And pretty soon depression brings cycles of depression that come back around in different seasons. See, there are cycles and seasons and feasts that are actually created for God's people to remember the wonder of God, remember the greatness of God, and their songs come alive with a different expression. But instead, cycles and seasons start representing hurt and old memories. That's why David said, I want full-time staff-paid Zechar rememberers. Every song that acknowledges the glory of God, write this down, get this over to a musician, and then when they present that song, they would present the song about the mighty acts of God, the wondrous and mighty works of God, the great things God has done, because what happens is anything God has performed in the past becomes a promise to a future. So if we can remember the mighty acts of God, remember the good things of God, but instead our creativity goes away and we start surviving in our spirit. We lose our poetry, lose our life, lose our art. You know what? When you look at art, it's nothing more than capturing the light and the radius of heaven and putting it on canvas. It's color. That's one of the reasons today, now, in many places around the earth, people are capturing their art again, and we're seeing this happen on numerous occasions. There are actually books being written now around and videos made around some of the things that God's done in the art realm. When they start painting the art, the creativity overflowing, they're accessing the colors and tones and textures of heaven while worshiping. They're accessing heaven and painting. Now people walk up and look at the art, and it's not like it's prophetic art, so we get interpretation. I believe the Spirit of the Lord is saying so and so. The Spirit of the Lord, you can look at it, you're going to get an interpretation, you'll get one, I'll get one, and so on. What it means to us, because it activates knowings, right? Now it's changing. People are walking up and looking at it, and the finger grows back. That's weird. People are walking and looking at it, and the tumor bursts and starts draining out of an ear. People walk up and look at it, and autism arrested by the glory of God. No longer. Because where they accessed the art was in worship. There's no autism in heaven. There's no depression in heaven. There's no hurt in heaven. There's no tears in heaven. There's no abuse in heaven. There's no, none of that's in heaven. And so those, like, this room is full of those that carry these kind of graces and anointings in your very DNA. It's in your very blood. And the enemy can keep you being drained and drained and drained and taken away because of all the issues of this world. And here's what happens with ultra-creative, prophetic, sensitive people. Remember this. Musicians, singers, poets, songwriters, and those who carry the sensibilities of the spirit realm, prophetic ones, are usually way over-sensitive. Overly sensitive, identity crisis, insecure. The pastor come walking down the hall this morning, and when he spoke to me, I don't think he meant it. He said hello, but And, you know, look at musicians and poets and songwriters, those people, overly sensitive, temperamental, half temper, half mental, you know? Always, you know what I'm saying? Always second guessing. I know what she said, but what she really meant was. And you think, what that overly sensitive nature, you know what? That we want to say, you know, well, first of all, the devil will use that and he will eat your lunch and he will pop the sack. The devil will destroy you with your overly sensitive nature. But in fact, he didn't give it to you. God gave it to you. He just wants you under submission to what he created it to be. Your sensitivity in the spirit realm rather than the flesh that's always robbing you and always trying to bring destruction and fear and rejection and that kind of stuff to your life. Poets and artists and overly sensitive people, they hear and see things that other people don't hear and see. They're supposed to. But the enemy, the devil didn't do that. God did that. We just got to get it rightly related to our gifting. So that becomes an overflow. Now we're more sensitive to the spirit realm than we are the flesh of rejection and hurt and wounding and so on. But the enemy, what he does is he'll take entire family bloodlines for generations and generations and generations suffering a particular curse that he's put against them. But I want to remind you, the curses are only fourth and fifth generation. The covenant blessings of God is forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And ever. So now is the time for those hidden away in communities, hidden away in culture, that have been carrying something that is so much God, now is the time for them to rise back up. And I believe that is why the artists, the singers, and the dancers start applying themselves to creativity as an expression of worship. And in those atmospheres, everything shifts and changes. Why? Because the more this dissolves away and away and away, now you have room for depression. Now despair, despondency, suicide, death. Doctors have actually realized that if you're not creative, the more this goes away, the more you have now atmosphere for insanity. And you think in delusion. And you forget who you are. Don't ever let man or any systems or anything of the past walk into the forest of your life and shut down the song that God created you for. As simple as this sounds, I think this is the beginning for Ireland to get their song back. Now is our time. Now is our time. In the next session, I want to talk about a miracle, a supernatural thing that happened in Dublin. not that many years ago. Just as a part of our personal journey, my wife and I, when we came here, the first time we came to Ireland, I told you about the green light that came through the room. And, you know, I'm sharing some stuff that's kind of weird, I know, but that's okay. I'm leaving in a couple of days. But I remember 2 days after that light came through the room, I had recently had just spoken at a conference in Charlotte, North Carolina. There's about 5,000 or 6,000 people there. And after this conference, and I just made a statement about feeling something in my heart for Ireland. And so somebody called me from that conference, and I didn't know these folks, and they said, "We want to invite you to come to our house." We live in Nashville, Tennessee. "We want you to come as a guest because the wife of this couple was from Newtownards, you know, Northern Ireland, or Bangor, one of those two." He said, "We want you to come to our house. We want to talk to you." And well, I said, "Well, I don't just go to people's house. I don't know, and thank you very much, but no. And I'm not going to get on an airplane and fly all the way back to Charlotte, North Carolina, to visit with somebody that I don't even know." And so I said, "Oh, I think I can be there tomorrow." You know, right in the middle of the conversation, I thought, "Oh, okay." That. So, you know what I did is they paid for the airplane tickets. Got on a plane. I fly back to Charlotte, North Carolina. And when back in those days, you know, you just didn't have all the security stuff and all that. I just stepped out of the plane, came right out into the concourse. You know how you come out of the airplane, out to the gate. As soon as I stepped out of the gate, there was an older man, kind of a tall guy, walked right up to me, and he says, "Are you the young man who God has given you a word for our country?" And how do you respond to somebody like that? I don't even know this guy. And he had suitcases. So I know this old guy is not who I was talking to on the phone, but he just, "Are you the young man who God has given a word for our country?" And I thought about it for just a second, and I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, when you come to Ireland," he says, "come and find me. This is my number. I want to talk with you." And so I took his card. I'll be okay. And then I look, and here comes the people, you know, like as far as from here to the wall, back there, walking toward me doing like this. And this guy walks right up to me, and he says, "Do you know who that is?" And I said, he's an Irish guy. He's got an accent. He said, "No, do you know who that is?" And she said, "Do you know who that was?" And I said, "Oh, yeah." And I said, "Yeah, it's a guy named Ian Paisley. He's from Ireland." And I had no clue who Ian Paisley was. I've never heard of an Ian Paisley. I didn't know anything about it. And And he said, "No, you don't understand." And he didn't have his bodyguards with him. He didn't have, he says, he's the loudest, most powerful voice in the whole in the conflict. And I said, "What kind of conflict?" Yeah, I'm telling you guys, all I really knew about anything Irish is my daddy all my life said, "Boy, if you don't straighten up, I'll take a shillelagh to you." And I didn't even know that was a real thing till I got over here. And there's shillelaghs everywhere. So that's where I was at the time. But I knew somehow or another, and that was the beginning of the journey. And we started on this journey now 16 times, and almost 20 years of research and digging into what's in our heart for the land. And I hadn't, and again, I don't, everybody in America is Irish, you know. And we're all coming over here trying to find our leprechaun or whatever. But I believe God's got a bigger idea. And I don't think it's wrapped around some American preacher personality either. It's not wrapped around some charisma of American ministry stuff. There's a unique sound in the song here that God's getting ready to flip the top off of the well, and wells of living water, not over old superstition and mythology and Celtic stuff, but there is a rich, rich, rich well of creativity that is about to be uncapped, and it's going to be a geyser of God glory, and it's going to wash and clean the streets of yesterday's abuses and hurts and woundings of all this conflict and everything that's been in the spirit realm against this people to keep them from fully realizing who they are as worshipers as well. And we're living in a generation that there's a promise of God. It says, in that day I'll build again the tabernacle of David, and I'll close up the breaches. There's something about to explode in this land, and every nation in the world will turn their eyes to Ireland in ways that they've never seen Ireland, because there's going to be a realization of God's glory coming out of these lands that have never been realized, ever. Is it time up? Okay, I want to pray something just a little bit regards to this. I just want to say a quick prayer. Father, I thank you that the minstrels of the days of old and the sounds that would have been heard on this land would have been known to lead into battles. But I'm declaring, Lord, now that the minstrels and the singers and the poets and the bards and those harpists and those dancers, that they'll not just be leading into battle now. That there's going to be a sound coming forth in the house of the Lord. It'll not be leading into a battle, but will be leading into your beauty. And in the beauty of your presence and the beauty of your holiness, a people will find the signature of your glory upon their life as they're quickened and come alive to everything that has been lost will be restored, renewed. I thank you, Lord, generations and generations of loss will now become generations and generations of a living God, not a dead religion, but a living God in the land again, releasing the sound of song in the streets. The dancing in the streets is not a poetic image. The dancing in the street is a prophetic reality that is coming, where people honor the glory of who you are again without all the religious stuff. And I know how deep that thing is in culture, and we're not declaring war against that. We're declaring the wonder of God against everything that the enemy has raised up as a violation and overshadowing truth with darkness. We declare light and glory and wonder and power, beauty, majesty, authority, and grace. In Jesus' name. In Jesus' name.
Amen. You know, just in the afternoon, we get back for two, and we're going to have, you know, a good set of just engaging with God through song. And we'll have Ray for the last time. I want to hear what that miracle is in Dublin, don't you? And so there's some stuff available for downstairs. Tea and coffee and stuff is free, but you pay for the sandwiches and the air. And there's other places around if you want to go. So I'll see you back here at 2:00, yeah? Have a good lunch.